Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text 31. So we'll do the individual words first. Taya Velasiteshu Eshu Guneshu Gunavan Iva Anta Pravishta Abhati Vignanena Vijnanena Vrijimvita. Taya Vilasite Shveshu. Taya Vilasite Shveshu. Guneshu Gunavaniva. Guneshu Guneshu Gunavaniva. Anta Pravishta Abhati. Anta Pravishta Abhati. Vijnanena Vrijimbita. Vijnanena Vrijimbita. Taya Vilasite Shveshu. Guneshu Gunavaniha. Anta Pravishta Abhati. Vijnanena Vrijimbita. Vaishnavis. Any other brave souls? Okay. Vilasitaya by them. Vilasiteshu, although in the function. Eshu, these. Guneshu, the modes of material nature. Gunavan, affected by the modes. Eva, as if. Anta, within. Pravishta, entered into. Abati, appears to be. Vijnanena, by transcendental consciousness. Vrijimbita, fully enlightened. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. After creating the material substance, the Lord, Vasudeva, expands Himself and enters into it. And although He is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, He is always fully enlightened in His transcendental position. Purport. The living entities are separated parts and parcels of the Lord, and the conditioned living entities, who are unfit for the spiritual kingdom, are strewn within the material world to enjoy matter to the fullest extent. As Paramatma, an eternal friend of the living entities, the Lord, by one of His plenary portions, accompanies the living entities to guide them in their material enjoyment and to become witness to all activities. While the living entities enjoy the material conditions, the Lord maintains His transcendental position without being affected by the material atmosphere. In the Vedic literatures, Shruti, it is said that there are two birds in one tree. One of them is eating the fruit of the tree, while the other is witnessing the actions. The witness is the Lord, and the fruit eater is the living entity. The fruit eater, living entity, has forgotten his real identity and is overwhelmed in the fruitive activities of the material conditions. But the Lord, Paramatma, is always full in transcendental knowledge. That is the difference between the supersoul and the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, the living entity, is controlled by the laws of nature, while the Paramatma, or the supersoul, is the controller of the material energy. Om Agina Timinam Dasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Jaya. Hare Krishna. So, I'd like to thank everybody for attending class and not leaving. Thank you. It's encouraging. So, hope I could say something worthwhile. I looked up the definition of that word strewn, and the dictionary definition was to scatter or spread things haphazardly, untidily, randomly over a surface area. And I thought, you know, Prabhupada was using this in reference to the living entities. He's saying how the living entities, the separated parts and parcels of the Lord, are strewn, at least the ones who are unfit to live in the spiritual kingdom. They're strewn within the material world to enjoy matter to its fullest extent. Doesn't sound like something I'd really like to have happen to me, to be strewn, you know, to be just scattered or spread haphazardly, untidily, within the material energy. But that's what happens. So it's really not a good idea to be a conditioned soul. You know, it's not, you can't expect the topmost treatment as a conditioned soul. You know, it's not designed for that purpose. Despite the fact, I was just listening to a lecture this morning, and Prabhupada referred to, he was saying that actually we're all expansions of Krishna. Krishna has many expansions. He was saying Krishna Swamsa expansions, Krishna Vibhinamsa expansions. When I heard that, it made me feel a little bit better. I felt more related to Krishna. We're Krishna Vibhinamsa expansions. And we're really part and parcel of Krishna, but we, as Prabhupada says here, we have a separate identity. You know, the Swamsa expansions of Krishna are identical to Krishna, whereas the Vibhinamsas are separated parts and parcels. Okay? And here in the material world, we don't receive the best treatment and it's our own fault. You know, we have nobody to blame for that aside from ourselves. We'll do a little thought experiment here to help us better understand the position of the conditioned souls here in the material world, okay? So imagine that you are the warden of a prison, okay? Warden means the manager, the top person in charge of the whole thing, okay? And one of the prisoners comes up to you and says, "Warden so-and-so, I'm not having a good experience here. Not really, not at all. I find the guards very cruel, they're abusive. They're unnecessarily mean and not helpful at all. I find the other prisoners menacing. I mean, some of these guys, I'm actually afraid for my life. I'm afraid I'm going to get beat up, maybe raped, killed. The sanitary conditions are appalling, and the food is disgusting, etc., etc., etc." Okay, you're the warden. Okay, and then this prisoner says to you, "So, could you respond to that? What would be your response?" By the way, let's just to make it more interesting, we'll just say this is a medium to high security prison, which means the people that are in this prison are, serious offenders, felons. They're not just in there for some misdemeanor like not paying a bunch of traffic tickets. They're in there for something like armed robbery, rape, manslaughter, first, second, or third degree murder, something like that. Okay, so you're the warden of the prison, and one of the prisoners comes and just makes a presentation like that to you, and then just asks you, "Could you respond to that? What would be your response?" This is not a rhetorical question. This is a real question. What would be your response? Prema Sankirtan. You want a microphone? Or? Okay, there's one answer. Peru Itzelam is not a country club. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you. If you were expecting a 5-star, I'm sorry to disappoint you. It's not, it's not a 5-star country club. Anybody else? Prema? Yeah, you're getting what you deserve. Right. You'd remind them of the fact that they're not like an innocent victim here. They did something to deserve the situation that they're in. Anybody else? We could think of something they'd like to say to the prisoner? Yeah. What would you say? Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anybody else want to just pitch in? Anyway, that's the gist of it. You'd kind of be somewhat empathetic, but at the same time, you'd have to point out to them that, hey, come on, let's be real here, You deserve this. This is the nature of this place. And when you get out, it's going to be different. That's what you got to do. You got to concentrate on getting, as long as you're in here, in this prison, your experience is not going to be radically different than what you just described. That's the nature of this place. You see? So in the same way, it's the nature of this place. So that gives us, some insight into the position of the conditioned soul in the material world. Krishna says, "Dukalaya mashashvatam." We cannot expect a good experience here in this material world, right? It's unrealistic to think like that. And Krishna never says it's going to be like that. Quite the contrary. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, this material world is dukkhalaya mashashvatam. It's temporary and it's full of various miseries. Right? So somebody might say, well, wait a second, I've heard that Krishna is unlimitedly merciful. I heard that God or Krishna is unlimitedly powerful, unlimitedly knowledgeable, and unlimitedly merciful. So where's the unlimited mercy? Well, yeah, he is unlimitedly merciful, but you got to understand it properly. He's unlimitedly merciful, not in making sure that all of us, meaning all the conditioned souls here in the material world, in human bodies and in other bodies, have a nice, pleasant experience here. No, obviously not. He's unlimitedly merciful in helping us get out of this miserable material condition of life and going back home, back to Godhead. That's his as I've quoted several times in several different classes I've made, and Prabhupada says in the purport in the eighth canto, that's his only aim. You know, that's his only aim, is to deliver the separated part and parcels from this conditioned life, from this material existence. And to that end, he's devised a very amazing multiple life program. You see? As devotees, we can understand this because we understand, we have all the tools, the philosophical tools to understand how this could be possible. You know, we're eternal, we're something more than just this material body. We're actually eternal spiritual beings. We're in a cycle of repeated birth and death. There's the laws of karma, da-da-da-da-da-da. So we can understand how, yeah, this is, it makes sense. It makes sense. Krishna's got us in a program here. It's a multiple life program to reform us, all of us. You know, we're all at many different levels, you know. But his ultimate aim and goal is just to get all his separated parts and parcels to be once again fit for being in the spiritual kingdom and get them back there, bring them back there. So that's what, you know. So yeah, so God, Krishna is unlimitedly merciful, but he's unlimitedly merciful in that sense, and not in seeing to it that we all have a night, not seeing to it that we all live happily ever after. Remember when you were a kid, you know, and they had the Grimm's fairy tales, or what was the Anderson's fairy tales, famous. At the end of the stories, and they all live happily after. Well, we don't all live happily ever after here in this material world. Right? No. Yeah, there, but not here. And you know, to expect that is totally unrealistic. So, this purport is dealing with more of the guidance aspect of you know, Krishna's mission here in the material world than it is the punishment aspect. And so I'm going to give another analogy. I'll just read a couple sentences again, and I'd like to present another analogy to help us better understand that. It says here, as Paramatma and the eternal friend of the living entities, the Lord, by one of his plenary portions, accompanies the living entities to guide them in their material enjoyment and to become witness to all activities. Well, what could that mean? How do you guide? I mean, what does that mean, that Krishna is guiding the living entities in their material enjoyment? Anybody like to hazard a guess? What does that mean? He's guiding them in their material enjoyment. Yeah, that's an aspect of it. The aspect that I thought of when I was preparing the class was that, you know, Krishna, as it says here, in the sentence before that, he's put us in here. He's strewn us within the material world so that we have the opportunity to enjoy matter to its fullest extent. See, but simultaneously, Krishna is trying to guide us and trying to help us get back to Godhead. So he's guiding us in our material enjoyment in the sense that he's trying to give us the intelligence and give us direction, how to do it in such a way that we don't become further degraded. See, actually, in the first, and I'll try to support that with a statement I heard Prabhupada make, in the first Back to Godhead magazine I got, Judah Karma also got this one. I don't know if it was his first one, but we both read the same thing. There was an interview. You know, Prabhupada was talking with some devotees. And you know how certain things just stick in your mind. Well, in that article there, Prabhupada said, nothing is prohibited, but everything is regulated for higher achievement. So that's the principle. Krishna is guiding in the sense that he's through the Vedas, through the Acharyas, he's giving us, giving the conditioned souls directions how to do things in such a way, you know, so that you could enjoy matter to its fullest extent, you know, to whatever degree that's possible. But do it in such a way that you're not going to be degraded by it. So he's guiding us in our material enjoyment. Once again, there could be more things that could be said about this. That was the idea that came to me, to understand how he's guiding us in our material enjoyment. And he becomes a witness to all activities. It says, while living entities enjoy the material conditions, the Lord maintains his transcendental position without being affected by the material atmosphere. Anyway, so as I mentioned, I thought of what I think is a really good analogy that kind of to help us better understand this aspect of Krishna's mission in the material, this guidance thing of you know, coming as the Paramatma. And that is this, that a few years back I was part of the team of devotees who were distributing books at Vans Warp Tour, okay, and so it's a concert tour, and they, you know, every summer they do 40 shows, starting in the middle of June, going till the beginning of August, and it goes all around the country, a lot of major cities, Nandakirtan was on it this year, this past summer. And so what happens is, you know, about between 10 and 20,000 kids show up, depending upon the size of the city and the day of the week. And a lot of times, the parents come along too. It's not uncommon for the parents to, you know, come along, because these are kids that are just getting out of high school for the most part. You know, the average age at Warped Tour is what, between about 15 to 25, right? So, and probably more of them are down towards 15 to 20. So they're young still. And so the parents come, and they don't just, sometimes they do, sometimes they just drop the kids off and then drive off. But a lot of times the parents come, they get right out there, and they go right inside the show with the kids, and they're, you know, they're right into the spirit of the thing. They dress, you know, in a T-shirt and shorts and, you know, the whole works, and they're there. And you, the reason that they're doing that is because they want to keep an eye on the kids. They're there as guides, you see? So it's kind of like the same as the super soul, you know? They're there to try to guide the kids, because they know that they want that. You know, they know this is what kids 15 to 20 want to do. They want to go to the Warped Tour, and they just want to, you know, yee-haw, you know, just kind of let loose and just do it all and just, you know, abandon, in full abandon, just enjoy the music and enjoy the being there with the other kids their own age, etc. But the parents know that there are certain pitfalls, there are certain dangers, and they're hoping that if, by accompanying the kid, they can kind of take him through it, you know, guide him through it unharmed. Such as, I'll give you an example. They have this thing at the Warped Tour called the mosh pit. And Nandakirtan knows what that is. Does anybody else know what that is? The mosh pit? Archer, a few devotees, not me. I'll explain to you, okay? So when the band's on the stage and starts playing, you know, sometimes some of the kids, they jump in front of the band. You know, there's like a space there between the crowd and the band on the stage. And they start dancing. And they start, like, going around in a circle and just dancing kind of, you know, freely and wildly. But and other kids will jump in. But what happens is some of the kids get violent, and they just start, like, swinging, you know? And there's no police there or anything like that. There's nobody to control it. And sometimes kids come out of this mosh pit, you know, they've really been belted around, right? They come out, they're beat up, basically, in the mosh pit. You know, it's mostly the guys that get in there. Sometimes girls go in there, too, if they're really brave. But you can get badly hurt. And we would see it show after show, you know, kids coming out, you know, being carried out by the medics or something like that. So the parents will, you know, might be there, and they might say, I don't want you going in the mosh pit. You can come, I'll take you, but no mosh pit. I don't want you, you know. And another thing they do at the Warped Tour is they sell alcoholic beverages to the kids, you know, if they're 18 or over, and they just totally rip you off. They'll charge like $8, $10 for a glass of beer, you know, some outrageous price. So the parents say, don't waste your money, don't, you know. You know, there's a lot of foul language there. In other words, basically the idea, the parents are there, and they don't really try to cramp the kid's style, but they try to be there in such a way that they can minimize, you know, the damage control. It's like damage control, minimize the, you know, the bad elements that the kid associates with. And once again, in the analogy, it says, like, Krishna remains in his transcendental position. Well, they do too. You know, and you, when you, sometimes you talk to them, and it's really interesting. They're dressed, as I said, in T-shirts and shorts and everything. But, you know, when you stop them, because you're trying to distribute the books to the kids, and they don't interfere. You know, it's not like outside, you know, sometimes if they're, like, they're at a shopping mall and some kids are with their parents, and you try to go talk to the kids, and the parents, because that's a different mood altogether. But at the Warped Tour, it's like their day, you know, and the parents know they can't. They can't cramp their style. So when you go to talk to the kids, the parents just stand there. Like that, you know. And sometimes you get, you know, you involve them in the conversation, and you find, he's, you know, what do you do? Oh, I'm a lawyer. You know, I'm a physician. Oh, I have such and such company. You know, these are established people, successful people. And some of them, sometimes the owner of the whole thing, this man named Kevin Lyman, who's a very nice man, he's actually helped our book distributors significantly over the last 20 years by giving us, you know, VIP passes every year and et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes he kind of roams around to keep an eye on things. And the parents, you know, he introduces him. He just comes right up to the parents and shakes hands with them and says, thanks for coming and bringing the kids. And they talk like normal human beings, you know. So the parents are there. And you know, and for all superficial appearances, it appears that they're just kind of like part of the scene and how they're dressed and everything. But they maintain their transcendental position. You know, they haven't gone crazy like the kids. They're there, and they're basically there supervising and guiding and trying to, you know, get their kids, you know, through it, so to speak. It's like an expression in the material world. He's going through a phase. Or that's just a stage he's going through. You've heard that expression? So actually, that's how Krishna sees what's going on with us. You know, we're like his kids. We are. We are Krishna's spiritual offsprings. We're his spiritual children. And those of us who are here in the material world are the wayward souls, the wayward children. So just like parents, they're thinking, oh, that's just a phase he's going through. That's just a stage he's going through. In the same way, that's how Krishna sees it. You know, the living entities that are here in the material world, Krishna's attitude is, that's just the stage they're going through. So I'm going to try to help them through it and bring them back. And that's what Paramatma is doing. That's what Krishna's doing as Paramatma. You know, he's not here to facilitate our enjoyment. You know, he's not here, well, let me show you how to do it better. Let me show you how to really enjoy matter to the fullest extent. No. He's here to try to, you know, help us see how to do it in such a way that we don't further degrade ourselves and ultimately realize the futility in the whole thing and realize how we should try to, you know, correct ourselves and get back, you know, interested in the real business, which is, you know, our relationship with him. So that's there. Now, just for the heck of it, we'll spin it around now, you see, in the sense that I've been talking about this guidance aspect of, you know, the relationship between the Lord and the living entity, and this, up till this point, I've been talking about how we're the ones that have to cooperate with the guidance. That's you know, that's obvious that, you know, Krishna's trying to guide us, and we should cooperate with his guidance. And but now let's flip it around a little bit. And as devotees, we're the guides. We're the guides. The older devotees are guides for the younger devotees. And all the devotees are guides for people in the material world. So, you know, we have like a dual role in the sense we're being guided. We should understand, well, we have to cooperate with the guidance of the spiritual master, the acharyas, the shastras, etc. And we're also guides in our own right of other devotees and non-devotees. So something that's important to remember for us as guides is, the objective. You know, the ultimate objective, which is to help people become devotees. And rules and regulations are there, and rules and regulations are, like, really important, super important. Let's take a temple situation. But Prabhupada, it does say in the Nectar Devotion that, you know, the rules and regulations are servants and assistants to the basic principle, always remember Krishna, never forget him. So I'll just kind of like paraphrase that a little bit. And that the rules and regulations are servants and assistants to the higher principle of trying to help somebody become a devotee. You know, and that's what we really want to do. And we have to pray for intelligence to be able to keep things in the proper perspective and, you know when to be strict about rules and regulations, when to maybe kind of back off a bit. And, you know, because keeping in mind, in sight, what the goal is. We want to help this person become a devotee. And so sometimes, you know, and Prabhupada did that. Sometimes Prabhupada was really strict. Sometimes Prabhupada was a little relaxed a little bit. And, you know, so that's an important thing. And in order to have that intelligence, to have that kind of discrimination, we have to do more than, we have to pray for it, but in addition to that, we have to have good sadhana. You know, good sadhana. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 10:10, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. See, so in other words, it's not a sentimental thing, just pray and you do any old nonsense and you pray and no. You have to be a serious devotee. and following the sadhana that, you know, Prabhupada's given us, the regulative principles of sadhana, and then, and on, in addition to that, pray to Krishna, or try to, you know, to have that good, and then we will. Krishna will give us the discrimination, the discernment, to be able to understand how to apply these teachings practically in a way that is going to be helpful, so that we'll be able to help other people become devotees. Let's see. Okay, I think that's everything I wanted to say. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Here's your chance to get even. I'm always asking questions. Archer is always teasing me. So here's your chance to get even if you want. Yeah, I'm under your tongue. Oh, wait for the microphone, I guess.
Your point in the multi-life program, it's almost like a school, like you have to graduate different grades so you finally graduate.
It's definitely not happening in this lifetime. I mean, obviously, just have to pick up a newspaper. I'm not saying you should be, if somebody were to pick up a newspaper or go on the internet and check out the news, you could see not everybody's going back to Godhead in this lifetime. Some people just get taken right out of the picture there. So this Krishna's doing it over many lives. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavamam papajate. You know, after many births and deaths. It's important to keep that, have that vision. Otherwise, I mean, if you don't have that vision, you can be bewildered. And a lot of people are bewildered. A lot of people are atheists because they just can't see. They look at what's going on in the world without any knowledge of, you know, that we're souls and we're going on from one lifetime to another and karma and reincarnation and like that, and they just think there can't be a God who's all powerful and all good, because look at the kind of stuff that's going on in this world. Any more than, you know, there's precious little evidence to support it. So without, as I said, we have the philosophical tools, we have the knowledge to be able to put together a concept. We don't have to put it together, it's been given to us. Understand the conception of God that makes sense, you know. At least to me, our philosophy makes sense to me. You know, I find it believable. Aside from being true, it actually is believable. It makes logical sense to me. You know, the different thought elements are there to enable me to feel like, yeah, this makes sense. I can see how this could be true. You see? Whereas if you don't have, without the ideas that we have in our philosophy, I couldn't blame somebody for being an atheist almost. Not an atheist. I couldn't blame somebody for finding it very hard to believe that there was a God that was all powerful and all good, all merciful. How could you? Anyway, thank you. That was just a comment, right? Amala Bhakti Maharaj would like to say something.
Yeah, thank you for a very nice class. And described very well what we must do to try to enable, try to help those persons, just like the super soul is helping us whenever we tend to go astray or we overlook certain weaknesses that we may have. The super soul is there to remind us, to awaken us, and to help us to overcome them as well. So the thing of this is, at least what I have found, we may know the philosophy very well. We may know a few hundred verses. We may know how to guide people. We may know many of the beautiful statements and phrases that Srila Prabhupada has made, and we use those in our advancing the philosophy, whether it's here on the street, or whether it's at one of the home programs, or whether it's at these different events that we go to. But we have to keep in mind a very important point, and I myself am still learning it, and I never stop learning it, and that is, you have to start out with the idea that I have no potency whatsoever. I can have all this beautiful philosophy, but unless I have the potency like Srila Prabhupada had, to be able to, it's a difference between taking something like paper, like a paper spitball, so to speak, and you throw it at a person's heart. It doesn't go anywhere. It just bounces off, okay? Which is tantamount to something going in one ear and going out the other ear. But like Srila Prabhupada, he had this potency from his purity. Now, we may understand that we don't have that purity, But Krishna does and Prabhupada does. And they are very eager to share with us that purity, provided we beg it for it, provided we cry out for it, provided we recognize we have so little of it, and we need it in order to really be able to make a difference in somebody else's life, just as Prabhupada made a difference in your life and in my life and so many of the Prabhupada disciples' lives. He made a great difference, and here we are still 44, 45 years later, still doing the same thing, because those bullets, not spitballs, but bullets really went into the heart, and they had an influential effect. So we need to remember that in and of ourselves, we can really do nothing except memorize and spit out. But we want to do more than that. We want these words to really go far into the heart. That means that we need to be praying to the Lord in between these different sales. Or, for example, you're out there, you distribute a book, and find... Now, you have a few moments to yourself before you go to the next person. That's the time to really pray hard. Thank you, my Lord, for enabling me to get that book to that person. Now, please, I beg you, that he reads that book. I beg you that he understands that book, because what can I do? Nothing. But you can do everything. You're all powerful. You're in his heart. Enable him. Awaken him. Help him to please look into it and not merely take it as another book or another whatever. It's something important. It's going to change his life, and you can do it. I can't do it. Okay? So when we take this helpless, dependent, crying out, begging the Lord for his assistance, he's ready to get right in there and help. But if we don't do that, and we want to take the position of lordship, yeah, I'm very powerful, I'm very great, I have so much potency, and look how many books I'm distributing, then he stands back. So you may distribute a few hundred books, but that doesn't mean those books are even going to get read. Don't be so presumptuous, because many of them don't get read, and they sit on... That doesn't mean it's a bad thing to distribute books, even if they sit on... Even if they sit on a shelf, they're still emanating the vibrations of spirituality. We don't deny that. But we want to go farther than that. We don't want them to sit just vibrations. We want them to actually become active participants in Krishna consciousness. So we can only do so much, and we need to realize that. We should not forget that. And the more we remember it, the more Krishna is ready to help us and get in there and enable us. And we find our speech takes on like... bullet-like. It becomes energetic. It becomes vitalized, and people respond to it accordingly. So, therefore, the more we realize how ineffective, inefficient, worthless, useless, good-for-nothing we are, and how great, how glorious, how wonderful, how amazing Krishna is, if we remember that, and we give all kudos, all praise, all honor to enable us to receive that, but not for our glory, but to further him, then Krishna is very pleased to heap upon us like a waterfall of mercy or bless, and we start doing the amazing. But when we do the amazing, we have to remember that's coming from Krishna. It's not by my endeavor. Even the endeavor can only be done. Sometimes we try to endeavor and we're lazy, we're indifferent, we're torpor, we have no real interest. But when we pray to Krishna regularly, continuously, always praying, always trying to remember him, always praising him. When he comes, he's the swift deliverer of the devotee to enable him to better serve in the sense of better quality of service and sometimes a better quantity of service, so that we're able to really do something truly potent. And potency comes from Krishna, if we just remember that.
Thank you. Thank you. That has to be one of the best after-class comments I've ever heard. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Something wrong, and that's why you're here. And second, that you know.